found one of those blue wires laying on the ground in front of the hardware. And he looked at that wire, and he looked at the hardware, and he looked at the wire, and he looked at the hardware, and he turned around and left. And we never saw him again. Which is okay with us, because we got his stock, you know. So. Don't tell him I said so. And meanwhile, you know, we pumped and pumped to get the software done for the show. And we worked furiously to get it done. And there was, right at the end, we're coming up to the end of time to get to the CES show. And we were desperate because things weren't going very well. So during the last few days before CES, a lot of us stayed there all the time. And in particular, Dale Luck and I were there nonstop for the several days that finally led up to the show. And we got pretty exhausted, as you can imagine, you know, working 72 hours nonstop with very little sleep or sleeping on a pillow on your lap. Any of you ever fallen asleep with your face on a keyboard? I did, you know, my drool got in it, and oh, God. I wake up and I got an image of a reverse A and a reverse S on my cheek, you know. And that reminds me of something really interesting I found out. I don't know how many of you are hardware people. I don't know a whole lot about hardware, but I learned a very real and interesting fact working at Amiga about hardware. You know, they have these little chips that do all this great magical hardware stuff for them, and they got all this circuitry and little tiny microscopic transistors and resistors and stuff in them. The resistors and the circuitry and the transistors and everything aren't what really do the magic in those chips. What really does the magic is each one of those chips has a certain quantity of blue smoke packed in it. And it's the blue smoke that does the good stuff. And the trick with hardware working is to not let the blue smoke out of the chips. That's it. The blue smoke comes out and that's it. They don't work anymore. So, and when you drool in your keyboard, the blue smoke comes out. It's really it's a drag. But there Dale and I were working so furiously, and I don't mean to diminish, you know, the efforts that the other put in, because they worked furiously too, but we really were there nonstop for all those days, and we were really getting exhausted. And we had to start searching around for ways to keep ourselves awake while we were trying to work. And coffee stopped working, you know, and Coke stopped working, and poking each other in the eye stopped working after a while. And we finally hit upon loud music. About, oh, I guess 4 o'clock in the morning or so, that we decided to crank the music, and that would keep us awake. And that kept us awake for a little while, but then even that stopped working. So what we started to do was to dance to this loud music. And, you know, and the more we'd get tired, we'd dance. I swear, we would stand up, the two of us. You didn't even want to sit down because that was too conducive to sleeping. So we would stand and lean over our keyboards and do the work, and then as soon as the computer started doing its stuff, we'd dance around the room, you know, and do this great dance that we would go to. And we'd get more tired, so we'd turn the music up louder and dance harder and more tired and louder and dancing and tired and louder and dancing. And then it's 7 o'clock in the morning and the first people show up for work. And the front door of the building is bowing out, you know. And what the heck is that? And they go back and they look and there's me and Dale dancing like this, you know. And that's how we came to be known as the Dancing Fools. And I have a treat for you guys. I have 2 treats for you guys, in fact. In preparation for this talk, I put a whole bunch of stuff together for this talk that I have never shown or played for people before, and one of them is this. What I have done is I found the very first piece of music that Dale and I ever danced to, and it never occurred to me before, but the symbolism of it is just too great. The name of the song that we first danced to ever was a song called Acting Very Strange by Michael Rutherford. And I have that to play for you here. And my other treat for you is that I happen to have Dale Luck here in the audience with me, and I would like to invite him up on stage for a demonstration. Get up here, Dale, come on. Hey, Actually, it's not working. How about that? Ah, here we go. Come here, I'll give you a demonstration. Dale Luck, ladies and gentlemen, Dale Luck. Dale, stand up, take a bow. Come on. Can I have the lights up? Again, come on, they couldn't see you. Come on. It's one of the things I like most about doing this stuff is that I get to embarrass people like this. Very first time that I spoke in Chicago, in fact, at the end I was talking about the things that what Amiga really meant to me, and it occurred to me that one of the most important people to the entire Amiga thing for me was my own mom, who was standing in the back going like this, God. Too late. Mom, stand up, take a bow. Boy, does she hate that. You'll notice she's not here today. So, we got a reasonable pile of demos together to show off at that first CES. How am I doing for time, by the way? Whoa. And I don't know if you guys can tell, but I'm having some fun here. We got a reasonable pile of stuff together. Had a lot of good things to show, but we were still working furiously. We wanted to get as much as we possibly could. We worked right up till the last minute trying to get everything done, so much so that even though we were exhausted, we had gone without sleep for all these days, we were still working right up to the last instant of time trying to get every last thing in. That even they were going to take our computers to the show so that we could continue to work there, and they even unplugged them, and we're carrying them out, and we're still walking along, typing it at the keyboard, trying to get the last bits of stuff in. And then they said, no, you have to stop now. We're going. And so we stopped and went off to, you know, get ready for the show. I had at this point not done anything, not gotten ready for the show at all because I had been worked for many days in a row. So I had to go home to, you know, I'd left myself 15 minutes to spend at home before I would leave for the show. And I got home to pack and found that, I didn't actually have any clean clothes left. Well, packing will be easy. Okay, now I've got 14 minutes. What am I going to do? And I was real tired. And I looked at my bed and I said, I could rest for just a minute. That's what I'll do. Just a minute. I could rest. No, what are you, stupid? Don't do that. Ah, yeah. Oh, God. I'm real tired. What am I going to do? The chair, I've got a stiff, straight, up back, you know, chair. I'll be able to sleep, I'll be able to sit in this and not fall asleep. So then, and it was only the fact that my neck was going over the back of the chair, I was slowly asphyxiating, that I finally woke up. And I woke up, and I was too late to catch the plane to CES. And I couldn't believe it, because this is CES. This is Silicon Valley going to the Consumer Electronics Show. All the flights are booked for weeks and weeks in advance. You don't miss a flight because the next flight is after CES, you know, and so you just don't miss it. And I couldn't believe that I was going to miss this flight. God, it's like unimaginable to me. So I got into my car and I broke all the rules of relativity, distorted the space-time continuum, and actually got to the airport before I left my home. It was great. But though I went fast, I didn't go fast enough. And I got there, and the plane had already pulled away from the dock. It hadn't gone yet. This is San Jose Airport, where they don't have these fancy wings that come down to the plane itself, but instead they have those ladders on wheels that they bring up, staircases that
You walk up into the plane, and the plane was still there, but the door was already closed, and the ladder was pulled away. And I went, and I begged, and I pleaded with the man behind the counter, "You gotta let me on that plane. I can't believe it. You gotta let me on that plane." "Oh, sorry, it's already left. You know, it's against regulations. I'm sorry, you'll have to take the next flight." "Next flight is next year. You gotta let me on that plane." "Oh, sorry." So then, you know, there's someone standing over by the door. I go over and ask her, "Please let me on that plane. You gotta do it. Oh, God. Let me on, let me on." Plane's still sitting there. It's not leaving yet, but it's closed. And then, no, you can't. Oh, God. And then I saw the woman in the orange suit with the walkie-talkie slung on her belt. And I went up and I said, "Hey, I'll take you on a date next Tuesday if you let me on that plane." She said, "Okay." I swear, I'm not kidding. For your information, I did take her out on a date and we had a great time, you know. But so she gets on the walkie-talkie. She says, pops up, okay, and they bring up the thing, and they open the door, and I walk up the stairs, and I get into the airplane. I'm all sweaty and all unkempt and everything. And when I walk in the airplane, I hear from my right down at the tail of the airplane this tremendous roar. "RJ made it! Yay!" And over here on my left, I hear this tiny little voice. "Oh, good, RJ made it." And I look into the cockpit of the airplane, and there's Dave Needle, to the hardware guy who's been standing there all this time with the pilot saying, "So, what's that knob do?" Here, in fact, thanks, if I've got this cue to the right place, this is Dave Needle. Dave Needle couldn't actually make it to the show, but he did want to be here, and he wanted to, you know, share himself with you guys and you with him a little bit, so I brought this.
"Chicago! Hi, aliens! Oh, glad you're all here! Bye!" "Can I get any applause?"
Okay. What a nut. It was great. So we went to the show and we set up. We had at the show this was what the original Amiga booth looked like at the show. Was that me?
"No, you can play the video. Whoa. Your hand is behind."
It was reminding me, I forgot to show you guys this. So I'll do it now. And this is as good a time as any if you'll let me cue this tape for you here. Sorry. This is, not the most professional production you've ever seen, is it? Okay, here we go.
"Now you can play the video game with your hands behind your back. With the power of the Joyboard Power Body Control, there is nothing like it. Only you can bend, you fly, you curl. You can even enter the game, see the most treacherous slopes, shoot the curve. Now, what has the rest of you been doing while your hand is in playing video games? Then stay for a save up all the power systems, your port power body control from Amiga, dedicated to the science of fun."
Hey. Which commercial includes the wonderful question, "Now, what has the rest of your body been doing while your hand has been playing video games?" I guess it depends on what game you're playing, huh? You know? Yeah, I've heard of a few good ones. Anyway. You'll notice that this commercial for the Joyboard is better than any commercial Commodore's ever done for the Amiga. Although I still do some work for Commodore, so I was just kidding, you know. I didn't really mean that. So, back to CES. This was our booth. The booth, it's not shown well in this photograph. it had this little section here where you can see some joy boards on the ground in the foreground of the section on the right, and there was some games that were spread all the way around the outside of that wing, and you could play joy board games, you could play little Amiga joystick games, and the booth was ostensibly a booth for Amiga game peripherals. But over here on the left, you can see just the edge of the other section of the booth. They had on the right-hand side this little tiny part with, you know, games around the outside and joysticks and stuff. And over here on the left, they had this massive, huge area with no windows and no way to know what's going on inside of it. And one door with this enormous burly guy that said, "Yeah, what do you want?" You know, anytime you wanted to come in, anytime we wanted to take anyone back there, we had to bribe the guy $50 to let us in. You know, okay, go ahead, okay, go ahead. And it was as if people weren't supposed to notice that there was something odd here. And even more than that, the entire time while this was going on, whenever we got to the audio part of the demonstrations that we put together, there was this one thing called Power Chord, which is thum, thum, thum. It was really great music synthesis. And, you know, the voices and all kinds of different stuff going on like that. And these great sounds are coming from behind this blank wall that had no one door and a burly guy. And people aren't supposed to know something's going on here. And even better than that, there was an escalator that ran to the upper level of the show. And if you rode it close to the Amiga booth, if you kind of looked over the top, you could see something was going on in there. Like, I don't know who puts this stuff together, but it wasn't me, I'll tell you. And inside that back room is where we showed the Amiga. The entire day of the show, we would bring people in one after another, and it was a great experience. We would bring in the the presidents and the vice presidents of companies, get there. Or no, we would ask them. We'd go to, you know, we went to Electronic Arts, we went to Activision, we went to Mindscape, and all these great companies. I said, you know, we've got something really incredible that you guys have got to see. It's a new game machine that's going to knock your socks off. It's incredible. It's the world's next generation. You know, and then we go on and on. And the guys would say, okay, I'm going to send one of my techies over to have a look at it, okay? Yeah, all right. And the techie would come over, and they'd come in, and they'd leave like this. You know, 5 minutes later, the guy's VP would be over there. Well, can I get a look at that thing myself? What do you say? It was great. Great sense of reward. And if you'll pardon my grammar, during the entire CES show, the one most oft-repeated comment that we heard was, "Oh, shit." Because, of course, no one had ever seen a computer back in 1983, or January of 84, do the kinds of things that this machine did. I have for us here, let me show you this first. This is what the thing looked like then at the show. The world's greatest next computer! All you have to do is be an electronic genius to get it to work, but other than that, it's wonderful. And it was funny too, because people would see this thing work and see the wonderful imagery that it was creating, and then they'd say, "Yeah, right." And they'd go and look under the skirt of the table to see where the real computer was. You know, what's going on under here? And the really embarrassing thing was that we had a computer under there. We had one of the Sages, which we were using as the disk device, because we hadn't gotten to doing the disk stuff yet. So there really was a computer under there. And then took a little bit extra explaining. Well, it's here, we can unplug it. We can show you, you know, and people looking for the videotape and stuff. I don't know. Here's a picture in the middle of the demonstration at CES. This is Bob Parisot, who was the original Amiga evangelist, and boy, he used to do a song and dance that you wouldn't believe. The guy was incredible. Sitting next to him is Glenn Keller, one of the great hardware whizzes of the project, and it may look like that he's assisting Bob Parisot with the demo, and Bob Parisot is rolling merrily along, but in truth, the hardware just died. And it froze on a picture, fortunately, so Bob was able to continue as if everything was okay, but Glenn is working furiously in this photograph trying to get the thing to work again. Here's one of the pictures that we showed there. I have this just because it's a novelty item. You don't see this picture anymore. It's not around anymore on any of the Amiga stuff. And I don't have it on an Amiga disc. What I have is a hard copy. And so what you're seeing here is a picture that was created originally on a Hewlett-Packard 2600. The imagery was ported over to the Amiga, displayed on the Amiga, sent to a printer from the Amiga, printed onto hard copy. I took it home, put it on my setup with my Digiview. Ooh, I love my Digiview, boy. All these slides are done with Digiview, by the way. And then, you know, brought back into the Amiga, this kind of circuitous route. It still looks reasonably good, you know, man. Here, I have unearthed for us something that I've only shown once before at a FOG meeting out in California. I have a collection of a videotape that we made of the demos that we showed at CES. So I can show you here some a brief glimpse at some of the original stuff that we showed. This is a vastly edited version, so you have to understand. Okay, I'm not going to show you all the demos, but gives you at least a quick view of it. The first thing up here is the Amiga logo, which we showed. We put this demo together to... yeah, the volume's going to be a problem here. We put this demo together to show how fast it could do area fill, and, you know, each time the pattern that came up started out random and then would metamorphize into the Amiga logo like that, which you're all pretty proud of. This next thing here is... this was the original workbench. This was the workbench that we're going to have. You can see such wonderful stuff on there as initialized disk and, I don't know, paint program, speech lab. We changed our minds since then. Here's some pictures that we had. That's the daughter of one of the artists. Here's the original Hold and Modify demo, the very first time any of us actually saw that Hold and Modify worked. Look, the Amiga can do database. Ooh. A good slice of this, unfortunately, because this one got lost, boy. This one was really great. Now, the next thing here, Mr. and Ms. Amiga. I don't know how well you can see it back there, but Mr. Amiga looks like he walked into a door with an A on it. Boom! And like, all right. This is the voice of the Amiga computer speaking. And they would go back and forth. I have a little bit of a demonstration here of them talking with each other.
Without them, I'd be just another face in the crowd. I have a little than 320 kilobyte disk drive that readily reads IBM disks. My memory is 128K bytes, internally expanded over to 512K.
You are very friendly. How do you feel about that?
That's the idea. From day one, the Amiga designers made sure that my hardware and software would work together to make me the most friendly computer ever seen.
Yeah. It looks kind of like Clutch Cargo, doesn't it? The real drag about that demo was that after CES, we brought them back to Amiga. And we then showed them to a lot of venture capitalists. We showed these demos over and over. And we still had only one working piece of hardware in the beginning. So that they would have to use that one piece of hardware, which we had in the software lab, to show the demos to the venture capitalists that they brought through. And so we in the software group got to listen to Mr. and Ms. Amiga give their speech probably about 200,000 times. And it was really bad because, you know, there was a couple of mistakes in there, and just to listen to it over and over again like that, it got to the point where every person in that room had that speech memorized. And we used to, jokingly, with our backs to the venture capitalists, look at each other and say the speech to each other. Because, of course, you couldn't work because you couldn't get at the hardware because it was being used, so, you know, we had to kill a little time. And one time we got carried away and started saying it out loud, and we said it too loud, and then before we knew it, everyone had turned around and was listening to us, you know. But not only could these guys recite this pre-canned speech that we had, but then when it was done with the speech, it stopped and allowed you to specify male or female and then type in some text, and you'd get the little Clutch Cargo guys to actually talk the text that you had typed in. When we had the guy from Sears by, we were trying to talk him into carrying the Amiga at Sears. He was pretty impressed with the whole thing, but when Dale had the idea to type in to have Mr. Amiga say, "I buy all my tools at Sears," he thought this was a pretty good thing. When we got back to Amiga, we used to have them say pornographic things to each other. If you ever hear an Amiga guy saying, "Oh baby, oh baby," now you know why. Okay. So I had to switch back here. And we had a reasonably good CES. The bouncing ball demo, by the way, I should tell you, the bouncing ball demo kind of came together before CES, but it really started bouncing and moving all around during CES. It was after the first night of CES, we had had an incredibly good show the first day. And I don't know if you've ever seen sales and marketing guys when they're on to something good, but their pupils turn into little dollar signs. And when they blink, it's like cha-ching, cha-ching. And these guys knew that we had an incredible machine. So they took us out to celebrate. They took us to an Italian dinner and poured a bunch of Chianti down our throats. We had a lot of Chianti. And meanwhile, we had intended on going back to the floor after dinner to get back to work because there were still more demos to do and, you know, as much as we could. We worked all night long during the shows, doing the demos. Every once in a while, we'd sleep on the floor, you know, and get the pattern of rug on your face instead of keyboard. And then we'd wake up in the morning and put on suits over our wrinkled up t-shirts, you know, and say, okay, I'll some Amiga computer, you know, and walk around the show and zombies. It was great. And we did demos every night, and that first night after the Chianti, we knew that we were going to work that night, so we had gone and gotten a bunch of beer and put it in a black garbage bag with ice in it, and by the time we got back to the show, of course, the ice was melted and the beer was warm, but we didn't care, you know. We drank it anyway, and it was in this frame of mind that we created the bouncing ball demo. Maybe you can understand. And it was a great show. It was a moment of great success. You know, everyone who saw it was awestruck by the thing. A lot of the software developers agreed to get behind it. Some hardware people said, you know, it's interesting. We want to know more so we can start to design hardware for it. And we were ecstatic. We're in heaven. We went to send all the stuff back. By the way, to ship the stuff out to California and to send it back, we had bought seats for the chips. One seat for each chip, which we had in boxes because we weren't going to trust it in luggage and it was too big to fit in the overheads, so we just bought seats for them, you know, and put the seat belts around them. And then we were coming back, we were in a slightly giddy mood, so we drew some faces on them since they were women anyway, and this box over here, you can't really see it real well, but the left one says underneath the face, it says something about on my face. I'm not sure what the first word is there. You can't see it. It kind of got torn off by the tape. But we put them on there like that, and it was great. You know, we paid for seats for these guys. Why not, you know, actually give them seats? And we belted them in, and then during the flight, you know, they got lunches. It was great. And then, of course, they got charged for watching the movie, so they had to pay for that. But it was the kind of spirit. And we went back now, and we're fully charged. Unfortunately, even though we had wowed the industry, we hadn't really wowed the venture capitalists, and they weren't really getting behind us. So instead, we started to hunt around for other people to put money into the company because the venture capitalists said, yeah, we'll throw some more in, but, you know, we've extended ourselves as far as we're really interested in going.